This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to tackle one of the great debates in the field of nutrition. Is meat bad for you? You know, there's the diet wars where on the one hand you have avowed vegans who take the position that meat is harmful, it's bad for the heart, it's carcinogenic, not meant for human consumption. And then at the opposite end of the spectrum, you have paleo dieters and ketogenic dieters who claim that we should be on an ultra-low carbohydrate diet, including generous amounts of animal protein. So these days, there's a lot of controversy about a lot of issues, and there's an old saying, you're entitled to your own opinions, but you're not entitled to your own facts. But oftentimes, people marshal their own facts to support their a priori positions or their ideology, whether it be in politics or nutrition or religion, you name it. There's all kinds of debates swirling around in the public forum. So today, we're going to talk to Ken Ong. He is the moving force behind HackingMyHealth.com. He's got a Facebook page, Hacking Healthcare, and there's some great posts there. And I came across a post of his that is really, really well done and talks about the China study. The China study is often marshaled as evidence for a vegan or plant-based diet. And a little background on that before we talk to Ken. Recently, I had some guests in from out of town. I hadn't seen them for a long time. And they, you know, we were making arrangements to have dinner, and they said, well, we have to go to a vegan restaurant. So we must go to, you know, so I looked around for a vegan restaurant. And we found a vegan restaurant. And even they actually took it to an extreme, because even at this vegan restaurant where there was no animal protein whatsoever, they were offered some roasted or grilled vegetables. And they said, hold the olive oil, because they were taking it to an extreme. They wanted to make sure that there wasn't a smidgen of fat in their diet. I also noted that when I saw them, they had kind of lost an alarming amount of weight. Before, a few years ago when I'd seen them, they were normal weight. They seemed to be, well, a little bit, I have to say, a little bit sallow looking, and perhaps on the emaciated side. And I said, well, what is it that's prompted you to follow this rather extreme version of a vegan diet? And they said, well, we read the China study. And the husband is a retired health professional. And he was taken by the scientific arguments in the China study. It's a big book. It's a scientific-sounding tome. And it makes a very persuasive case that meat and animal products, including dairy, are responsible for virtually all the ills that afflict modern civilized man. And so it's with great pleasure that we bring aboard Ken Ong, who's written this is a video, which is well worth finding at HackingMyHealth.com. It's entitled The China Study Debunked. Welcome, Ken. It's nice having you on Intelligent Medicine.
Well, thank you, Dr. Hoffman. I really appreciate you taking the time to engage in this debate. I think it's a debate that has the time has come for it.
Indeed. And, you know, we've had, several guests addressing this. We've had Denise Minger a couple of years back, who's also written a very interesting and detailed critique of the China study. And there has been some pushback on the scientific bona fides of this so-called study, and I put it in quotation marks, and you've done a good job of boiling down some of the issues. So first of all, you know, frame the issue. What is the China study? What are we talking about here?
Okay, that's a really good place to start. Well, the China study, we have to be careful about the terms that we use. First of all, the China study that I'm referring to is the book entitled The China Study by Dr. Campbell here. And you made a great introduction to the book and Dr. Campbell. But there is also what's called the original China study, which was really an 895-page study that looked at the diet and lifestyle and mortality in China. And that was the original study that that inspired Dr. Campbell to write his own book. And so there really is a distinction between the two. And in my arguments with vegans and what I would call people who are considered themselves vegan Americans, I try to make that distinction that the study is one part, and then Dr. Campbell's book is another part.
It's an interpretation. In other words, he didn't go with a pith helmet, you know, into the field, you know, with a notebook and scientific instruments and visit rural villages in China himself and compile data. That was done by other researchers.
Exactly. And if you look at the original, when I say the original China study, the original Cornell China Oxford study, it was a vast epidemiological study. And you could purchase that book. It's got 895 pages in it, full of information, full of data. But then if you compare that to Dr. Campbell's China study, now Dr. Campbell's China study has 419 pages, mm-hmm. but only one chapter of Dr. Campbell's The China Study effectively references the original China study. So that is a clear distinction we have to make. And what when I read Dr. Campbell's book, I was very inspired. I think he wrote a very good mm-hmm. persuasive book. It had emotional content. It was inspiring. It was almost like a thriller. Mm-hmm. So I really commend him for that. The only problem that I have is, you know, as a person who has studied medical data analytics and studied data analytics, the foundation that he built his arguments are not as sturdy as people make it appear to be.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And you know, you're one of the themes of your videos and your writings is how data can be misleading, how data can be marshaled to support one or another scientific contention.
Yes, that's absolutely the case, Dr. Hoffman. You made an amazing introduction, and it was an introduction that really speaks to our times. We live in a time wherein people are fact challenged, or facts have become malleable, and data has become malleable. And although these are the times that we live in, these are not necessarily the best for society. And so one of the reasons I approached this project in this video was that I wanted to give people a better understanding of and clarification of what was out there. And so I started off with this book because veganism is a big topic. I know many vegans. I've had the similar experience when I have vegan friends who switched to veganism. And I asked them, okay, well, why did you do that? And they said, well, we have this book that came out, The China Study, and it's based on science. And because it's based on quote-unquote science, it's got to be correct. But what we're learning when we go deeper into a book like Dr. Campbell's The China Study is that there are problems with the way that the data is interpreted. And, you know, I could explain that point by point later, but if you really want to get a deep dive into it, you can go check out the video at hackingmyhealth.com. One of the reasons I also came up with this video was I was also inspired by Denise Menger. I think she wrote some amazing, amazing analysis and responses to Dr. Campbell. Now, the problem is that most people out there don't have 5, 6 hours to spend looking through all this arguments and counter-arguments. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know what? We need to do something for the general public. You know, let's give them something under 30 minutes that they can sit down and look at one sitting over a cup of coffee and come up with the, you know, essential clarifications that they can then use to determine for themselves if veganism is right for them or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get into it. Let's talk about, you know, some of the data that is presented in the China study. And I think most impressive is a graph. And, you know, there's a lot of wonky technical people out there, you know, people in Silicon Valley and, you know, people in scientific fields, engineers, smart people who look at graphs. And this graph is very impressive because what it shows is there's a very neat correlation between meat consumption and the risk of colon cancer. So, you know, country by country, I believe it is assorted. So, that, you know, countries that are low in consumption, colon cancer virtually unheard of. Countries where there's a lot of meat consumption, prosperous countries like the United States, New Zealand, and so on, they top the list for colon cancer incidence. So, well, isn't that enough? That's convincing.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And if you go to my video, you will see that graph. And I believe that graph may have come from the Dr. Campbell's book itself. Although that graph is very convincing, there are problems with it. And there's some data that might be missing. And so what I did was I first presented that graph, and then I presented a second graph. Do you see the second graph?
Indeed. Tell us
okay.
about that.
Okay. Well, the reason I put these two side by side together is also because I'm trying to teach people certain basics of statistics and ways of looking at data. So initially we saw the first graph, which had this, you know, very convincing correlation between colon cancer and meat consumption. All right. And then we have another graph that I put up, and this time it's looking at breast cancer and internet users. So what this graph also shows is that as internet users increase, or the number of internet users increase, breast cancer also increases.
Well, that may mean that you know, we got to stay away from computer screens because of the emanations of the computer screens might affect the breast tissue and cause cancer to develop. If we were to follow that conclusion to its logical ends.
Absolutely, or we could conclude that maybe you know Wi-Fi is very a lot more dangerous than we think it is.
Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you know, some of these things like computer use is a proxy for many other types of behaviors and exposures that could explain the linkage. And it's not about, you know, whether you're keeping your breasts a few inches away from a computer screen or from an iPhone or a tablet.
Absolutely, absolutely. It that could be too. But the message I'm trying to get across, or the lesson that I'm trying to get across here, is that we have to be careful about correlations, because correlations don't necessarily equate to causation. And that is a fundamental principle that one would learn in Statistics 101 or Data Analytics 101. Bothers me is that there's so many studies that are coming out these days, or have been coming out, wherein they would say, oh, there's a correlation between this and that. There's a correlation between X and A, or between X, Y, and Z, and stuff like that. And the correlations are interesting to note, but that doesn't necessarily mean causation. And that's one of the problems that I found with Dr. Campbell's book, and I can explain that later in terms of some of the analysis that he did.
And there's actually in logic and in philosophy, if you study this, and most people don't because they don't think philosophy is going to get them a good job at a major head fund. There's something called the post hoc ergo propter hoc fallacy, and that's I guess that's Latin. I didn't study Latin, but I see the translation here. And it means after this, therefore, because of this. It's a logical fallacy that states, I'm reading from Wikipedia here, since event Y followed event X, event Y must have been caused by event X. And it's often shortened simply to what's called the post hoc fallacy. And there's a lot of post hoc fallacies in the China study, aren't there?
Absolutely, Dr. Hoffman, absolutely. In fact, that could be a nice segue into looking at the first issue that I found with Dr. Campbell's book. Now, there are a lot of issues with Dr. Campbell's book that I find a little bit problematic, you know, coming from my background in statistical analysis and data analysis. But we don't have time to go through all of it. So what I would like to do is maybe focus on some of the ones that kind of jump out at you.
Okay.
Okay, great. So the first one is the associations, what I would call misleading association between cancer, cholesterol, and animal protein. Now, if you read Dr. Campbell's book, you will see this issue come out rather prominently. And basically what he does is that he associates cancer with cholesterol, all right? And then cholesterol associates with animal protein. And therefore, we infer that animal protein associates with cancer, okay? So from another angle, we could say cancer associates with cholesterol. Cholesterol negatively associates with plant protein. And therefore, we infer that plant protein protects against cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're seeing here is a form of logical fallacy. That is one problem. The other problem we're seeing here is that there is no direct linkage between cancer and animal protein. What we have here is that Dr. Campbell threw in an intermediary variable, mm-hmm. Which is he's using cholesterol.
Okay.
And
as a marker for animal consumption, or did he actually, in the study, do they actually compile into the numbers of servings of cholesterol-laden foods that people are taking in?
The original China study was done was that they used a questionnaire, and the questionnaire was really based on, I believe, nutritional tables mm-hmm. rather than actual foods. So that's also, because they broke down to composition. So that also is a little bit problematic.
Yeah, often, by the way, these types of studies are prey to many types of limitations. First of all, when you ask somebody what they ate, sometimes people have a hard time telling you what they ate last Tuesday. Much less what have you been eating over the last 5 or 10 or 20 years. And sometimes people will embellish. They'll, claim that they eat more virtuously than they really do. So these are what are called recall studies. And, unless you lock people on a metabolic ward, and it's not really feasible to do this in cancer studies because you'd have to lock them in a ward for like, 2 or 3 decades, and make
exactly.
sure that the only foods they consume are what they were administered. You don't really have a controlled situation, do you?
Absolutely, absolutely. And Dr. Hoffman, this also segues into another brilliant insight into the problem with Dr. Campbell's book was that he was pulling information from the original China study, which is, in essence, an epidemiological study.
Yeah.
All right? Mm-hmm. So when you look at epidemiological studies, they are really vast surveys on a grand scale, okay? Mm-hmm. And epidemiological studies are not necessarily meant to find causations. Mm-hmm. Epidemiological studies are also considered or called observational studies. Mm-hmm. And normally what you do when you're an epidemiologist or a PhD along those lines is that you take an observational study and then you break it down and go deeper into it. You could go and create what's called a cross-sectional survey. You could do a cohort study after that, or you can do, as what you mentioned, a case control study. What an authentic scientist would do is he would take an observational study or an epidemiological study, and then he would use that as the beginning of a thesis and then follow from there rather than trying to deduce a conclusion.
So in other words, they are hypothesis generating. So actually another major, quote, study that has generated some flaws in our understanding of the relationship of diet to overall health is the seven country study that was done in Europe that actually looked at countries that were subject to starvation and deprivation during and in the aftermath of World War II. And this was used to buttress the argument that people shouldn't consume much in the way of butter or cholesterol-containing foods for heart disease prevention. But actually, maybe, just maybe, you know, eating a lot less calories or pretty near starving may be the answer.
That you know, you bring up another good point about the China study, is that although we have vast amounts of data, the conclusions that we draw from it can be different, or we may be looking at what's called confounding variables. All right, so basically, what could be happening is that this could be having effect on that, but then there could be another reason as to what the true causation is. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you know, I have vegan friends, or I've heard, you know, I've read all these studies or testimonials on vegans who say basically, I've gone on a vegan diet, and since I've gone on a vegan and whole foods plant-based diet, I have lost weight, I have gained energy, and I feel a lot better. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's great. But there could be other causes for why you're feeling better and healthier and having more energy. It could be the fact that you've cut out processed foods from your diet. Mm-hmm. It could be the fact that you're eating less. It could be the fact that you're exercising more.
Right. So there are other variables. Which is actually part of the ethos of veganism is an overall healthier lifestyle. So, you know, when we see people who are vegetarians, we may be seeing a whole host of associated health behaviors that may contribute to their well-being and their improved statistics.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so then and then an informed consumer would have to make that, you know, they've got to do that level of dig a little bit deeper because you will hear testimonials. But then, you know, these testimonials, the causation of these better health may be something else. And, you know, that's why, you know, I think it's great we're having this type of conversation, is that, you know, consumers out there and people out there who really are concerned about their health can get can have the tools to make a better analytical judgment as to whether they should do this diet or that diet.
Indeed. All right, this is a good point at which to pause, because we divide our podcasts into two parts. We're talking to Ken Ong, and he is in a methodical way taking apart the China study, which is the basis for the belief that a vegan or vegetarian lifestyle is preferable from cancer standpoint and from an overall health standpoint to a diet that includes animal protein. There are obviously some logical flaws involved. And when we return, we'll explore more on the fundamentals of statistics and how there are lies, damn lies, in statistics, as Mark Twain once said. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.